The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I think my favorite quote was by Norman MacLean, who referred to it as the most viewed by questionably inebriated art critics.
Yeah, I do love that.
Any piece of artwork in American history. And I think that's pretty much on target, I have to admit.
Greetings and welcome back to The Writer Files. I am still your host, Kelton Reed, wishing you positivity, productivity, and prosperity in this pretty new year. This week, award-winning mystery writer and popular crime novelist Craig Johnson rapped with me about his epic Longmire series, Shotgun, Self-Realization, and How to Write Good Books. Craig's the New York Times bestselling author of the Longmire Mysteries, the bedrock of the hit Netflix series of the same name. His latest novel is the 16th Sheriff Walt Longmire murder mystery, Next to Last Stand, a story that centers around Custer's last fight, one of the most viewed paintings in American history. The short version, Custer's Last Fight, was copied and distributed by Anheuser-Busch at a rate of over 2 million copies a year and destroyed in a fire at the 7th Cavalry headquarters in Fort Bliss, Texas in 1946. Or was it? In a starred review, Library Journal said of the book, Johnson lightens the atmosphere in this complex, thought-provoking mystery that highlights art and Western history, emphasizing the contrast between Native accounts and white history. In this file, Craig and I discussed why he chose to feature forgotten U.S. veterans in his latest book, the wisdom behind Choose a Job You Love, how to host an unforgettable virtual book tour event, his special relationship with the cast and crew of the Longmire TV series, and a lot more. Stay safe and stay sane out there. And I'll see you soon. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click subscribe to automatically see new interviews as soon as they're published. And leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts to help other writers find us. All right, we are back on The Writer Files. I am ecstatic today to be joined by a special guest. We've got the prolific novelist, Craig Johnson. Thanks so much for taking the time, man.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I know that you are doing some very interesting things around the promotion of your latest in the Longmire mystery series. And I want to talk about the latest and some of your fantastic work and then all of the interesting things that you've got planned or have already done regarding the promotion. But yeah, as we do with so many best-selling novelists and authors, let's turn the clock back a little bit and just talk about how you got here, because I guess this is the 16th in the series, right? And can you even remember a time when you weren't writing
Longmire? No, I can't. And it's, you know, and also it's hard for me to believe that it's been 16 years that I've been writing these books. I mean, I must be the living embodiment of the adage that if you enjoy what you're doing, you never work a day in your life, like that, because I just seems like it's been a couple of weeks since I wrote The Cold Dish, like at the first Walt Longmire novel, like that. And I just love what I do. I love writing, like that. I love it's been a tough year because I also love the touring and meeting the readers and getting out there and, you know, being with the, you know, getting their take on things like it and answering questions and doing all of that like that. But I don't know. This is it's a weird year for everybody, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think it's especially poignant that we're speaking actually on Veterans Day, given that Walt, you know, is a veteran and the long, the popular character. And, you know, of course, we'll dig into the latest, but one of the characters who plays prominently is also a veteran of a different war, the Korean War. And then, of course, we'll dig into the very interesting history, the historical piece that goes into this one. But yeah, let's dig in to the next to last stand and talk first about kind of, I don't know, the genesis of course, how you incorporate this fantastically interesting piece of Americana, and then yeah, how you're kind of tied to it personally, because there's a lot to dig into here.
There is, and I can kind of like swing it back also around back to your Veterans Day comment too, like that, because I had this idea like that for this book, like that, and you know, it was big, it was epic, it had a history to it, it had all these things that it would be workable. But the problem was, is like, you know, how do you do an art heist book that involves the sheriff of the least populated county and the least populated state in America? I mean, there's got to be some kind of connection there like that, you know, for that to be plausible. Right. And we're fortunate enough like that, that, you know, just outside of Buffalo, which is kind of the model for, you know, the town of Durand in the fictitious county of Absaroka, like that, which is where Walt sheriffs like that. We were fortunate enough to have Fort McKinney, which was one of the forts that was built in response to the Little Bighorn for fear that there were going to be, you know, native uprisings like that all over the place after 1876, like that, which didn't come to fruition. And right. Then I think it was like about the turn of the century, about 1903 or so, the federal government sold the fort to the state of Wyoming, and they promptly turned it into the soldier and sailor's home. Like it became the veterans home for Wyoming.
Yeah.
And that kind of became my connection point. There were used to be a group of individuals called the Wavers, who used to sit in their wheelchairs out in front of Fort McKinney and wave at traffic. Like, and as I was building my ranch here, you know, about 20 years ago, I would stop in every once in a while and just, you know, flip the tailgate down and sit there and talk with those guys because they had incredible stories. These were guys that were like World War II veterans, Korean veterans, Vietnam veterans, and they had like, you know, really, really marvelous stories. Like, and so I would love to just sit out there and talk with them. Like, and so when it came time to try and figure out a way to make this art heist, you know, viable, you know, for Walt Longmire to be involved, like, and I thought, you know what? The veterans home is probably going to end up being like at one of the components there. Yeah. And I asked the local sheriff, like, and I asked him, I said, well, you know, do you ever have any dealings up at the veterans home? And he goes, oh yeah. He says, you know, what'll happen is one of them will pass and then we'll get a call like that. And we'll drive up there and, you know, in their footlocker, they'll have, a handgun or a piece of armament or ammunition or something like that that needs to be disposed of. And he said, you know, we'll have to take care of that. And I thought, well, there it is. There's my lead-in point, like, you know, for this particular piece of artwork, which is kind of the MacGuffin of Next to Last Stand.
Yeah, yeah. So Custer's Last Fight being that MacGuffin and one of the most viewed paintings in American history. And looking at it, of course, you remember that it's got that Anheuser-Busch font on at the bottom, and that's how that's how we've all seen it, at least
absolutely
my generation. But yeah, you mentioned that it's kind of like in every bar in the West, kind of hanging over the, or you know, probably close to the bathroom at this point. But
I think my favorite quote was by Norman MacLean, who referred to it as the most viewed by questionably inebriated art critics. Again.
Yeah, I do love that.
Any piece of artwork in American history, and I think that's pretty much on target, I have to admit. Like, but to get into the book, you know, it's a quick, you know, art history lesson. It was painted by Cassili Adams, like an artist out of St. Louis, who painted this monstrous, you know, canvas, which was like about 16.5 by 9.5 feet, huge, like that. And it occupied a space after it did a tour in a saloon by the train station in St. Louis, like that, which went out of business and went bankrupt. And at that point, its largest creditor was a then local brewery by the name of Anheuser-Busch. And Augie Bush walked into the saloon and said, "You owe me $30,000 for the beer. You know, how are you going to pay me?" And they said, "Well, we're bankrupt. We don't have any money." And he said, "Okay, I'll take the painting." Like, and he took the painting off the wall, hauled it back up to the brewery, rolled it out in front of his merchandising guys and said, "Okay, we're going to make posters of this painting. And we are going to send them to every single bar, every single, you know, saloon, every single restaurant that sells Budweiser beer. And by the time we're done with this, it's going to be, you know, we're going to be a much larger brewery than we are now." And you know what? It worked. It worked with a vengeance. They became like the largest brewery in the world. And after he had like got his 40 and found out of this, he kind of sent, you know, word to the 7th Cavalry that he would like to return, but actually give the painting to them, like at which he did. And fit of philanthropic zeal, like that, gave the painting to the 7th Cavalry, which was in Fort Bliss, Texas at that period in time. Mm. And it hung there on their commissary officers club wall until 1946, when it burned to the ground and the painting was destroyed. Or was it? And
yeah.
Therein lies the crux of the next last stand.
That's right. That's right.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, kudos on the work and congrats on the long running series and the popularity. And I understand that, you know, part of the writing process of this one in particular, evidenced by your art history lesson there, is that the amount of research that went into it might have been a little bit different than some of your other ones.
It was a monster. In the modern era, like you really kind of have to make sure that you get all your T's crossed and your I's dotted like that, because, you know, it's just too easy, you know, for people to go out and check, you know, your resources like that, you know, and double check, you know, on what it is you say. So, you have a double responsibility to make sure that you get these things correct. And, you know, like I said, you know, the Little Bighorn is only like about 90 minutes up the road, you know, from where my ranch is. Yeah. And so it's kind of local history like that. And you know, so you have to make sure you get this stuff right. But then, you know, the question becomes like, you don't want to just, you know, do 8 years of research and then regurgitate, you know, everything that you've, you know, come up with, you know, on the poor reader. You know, you really need to find something new, something different like that. And I thought the access point of the painting, you know, kind of provided that. And then here in the last like 10 years or so, there's actually been kind of a renaissance, I think, in history writing, you know, with Nathaniel Philbrick, James Donovan, like that, a lot of writing about the Little Bighorn, James Welch's book, you know, Killing Custer, a lot of anthologies that have come out, you know, with native voices, authors that, you know, that have never been heard from before, mm-hmm. Witnesses, you know, of like warriors that were 12 and 13 years old, you know, at the battlefield, you know, that, you know, their stories have never been heard like, and so it was kind of like a perfect little storm, you know, an opportunity for me to jump in and do this. I have to laugh, you know, because you mentioned Longmire. And one of the funny things was, is that, you know, I was doing research for this book almost 8 years ago. And, I remember telling the producers about it, and they actually used it as one of the, you know, subplots in one of their episodes in the first season of Longmire. And I've been getting emails from people every once in a while saying, "Did you get the idea for this book, you know, from the episode in the TV show?" And I'm like, no, they got that from me. Thank you very much. So,
That's awesome. Yeah, that's very meta. It's like, wait, no, wait a second. That was my idea. Well, this is really interesting because, you know, I've spoken with so many authors during the pandemic. And of course, you know, we lament the concentric circles of crises that we've all been facing. And of course, the stress of it is wearing on people. But, you know, I think one of the big ones is just like not being able to get out and do that great tour that you typically do to all these great cities and bookstores and so on and so forth. So talk a little bit about this fantastically creative, you know, multiple day events that you did and kind of how you reached out to some of your friends to help you make it an experience as opposed to just getting on a Zoom call.
Well, I've been extraordinarily fortunate in the sense that, like, you know, I was intimately involved, you know, with a lot of the action of the television show, like that, and getting to know the actors and directors and producers. And I had a wonderful time. Like, it was really kind of a wonderful experience for me, to be that closely involved, which is not always the case, you know, with authors in Hollywood, going all the way back to, you know, Faulkner and Hemingway and those guys that, you know, that had fits, you know, working with Hollywood. But yeah. I had a good group. I had a good group of people to work with, and they were phenomenal. And, you know, the situation, you know, is unique in the sense that, you know, that there's a very definitive place and ensemble of characters. Like, and we've got this thing called Longmire Days that we do up here in Buffalo, Wyoming every year. Every summer in July, we get all of the actors from the TV show to come and show up with about 10 to 15,000 of their closest friends. And and it's quite a mob event, but it's really kind of charming and wonderful too, like that, because, you know, every once in a while, you know, we sell tickets to it, and then a lot of the benefits, you know, all the profit benefits, like, go to a charity, nice. Which the last couple of years has been Canine Warriors, like that, which pairs, you know, veterans with rescue dogs, like that, which is a very, you know, wonderful event. But, you know, the actors have been extraordinarily, you know, supportive, you know, of the events, like that. And so when this weird year kind of, you know, came around, I thought to myself, well, they're not going anywhere either. They're just sitting, you know, in their houses, you know, trying to figure out what the next move is, you know. And I thought, what the heck? I'll ask them and see if they want to do a book tour. Like, and I think they must have been really bored out of their minds, like that, because all of them said yes. Like, I kind of thought maybe two or three, maybe four at the most, you know, would say yes, you know. So I asked all of them because awesome. I thought, well, just shotgun method of self-realization. I'll ask all of them and, you know, see, like, if they'll go for it, like, if it is virtual tour. And, and they all answered and said, absolutely. I want to do a couple, as a matter of fact. Lou Diamond Phillips wanted to do a few, like, because he has a book coming out, called The Tinderbox. Like, and then, Robert Taylor out of Australia was like, I want to do more than one. Like, and I was like, okay. Like, and so we ended up actually doing multiple actors, you know, in all of the events, which was just a hoot. Because, you know, after you tour, you know, by yourself, you know, for 16 years or 15 years, you know, you kind of get into a pattern, you know, of being a kind of a one man show like that. But then to suddenly have, you know, a dozen co-stars, it was, you know, really kind of mixed things up and made it a little bit more interesting because, of course, the stories that they tell about Longmire and, you know, and the books and all these things are a little bit different from the ones that I tell.
Yeah.
And then a couple of other things like that. They had the tour spread out over like about a 3-week period, which is, you know, what I normally do. If I go out on the road, I've been out on the road. There have been times like it when I've had as many as, you know, 30 stops, you know, because I enjoy it. I have a good time doing it, and I don't mind touring at all like that. And, you know, and this was weird because they had it stretched out over about a 3-week period. And I said, why are we doing that? And they said, well, what do you mean? Like, and I said, well, you know, it's stretched out over 3 weeks. Like, and they said, well, you've got so many events. Like, and I said, but I can do like three a day. Like, and I said, I'm doing them from my kitchen. So there's no reason why we can't do, you know, two or three a day. Like, and there was a little bit of resistance at first. And then I think they kind of realized, you know, well, that kind of makes sense, you know, because, you know, instead of touring for 3 weeks, I can tour for like about a week or so and then it's done. And, nice. You know, not that that's your goal, but, you know, that it kind of like, you know, you're kind of in the flow of things, you know, for a week or so like that. And it's really kind of easy. It's also a lot easier for the actors, you know, because you can say, look, this is only about a week and a half long and then you're done, you know, as opposed to stretching it out over a month. And it seems to have worked, you know, really, really well. And, you know, the response was fantastic. you know, thousands of people like, you know, tuning in, and it was great. It was a really kind of a wonderful way to do it. I don't think it's ever going to replace actual touring, but you know, it does give you an opportunity to reach a much larger readership base. I mean, you know, I there were people that were on these Zoom calls like that were, you know, French readers and British readers and, you know, Russian readers and Egyptian readers and all of that. And that's, you know, that's really kind of wonderful to be able to get out there like that and speak to more of a global reading audience.
Yeah, that's pretty special.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Talk a little bit, and you mentioned Lou Diamond Phillips, but of course, just an exemplary actor and now a debut author, correct? And you're interviewing him soon.
I am. I've got an interview with him tonight. And I did some interviews with him earlier, when the book came out, and, it was interesting. It was really interesting. I mean, first thing you get from Lou is he's very, very smart. He's extraordinarily intelligent and he's a reader. He's a big time reader. He reads constantly. Whenever he auditioned for the role of Henry Standing Bear in Longmire, he discovered that the television show was based off of a series of books. And so he ran out, I think, you know, to I think it was the Barnes and Noble in Santa Monica and grabbed the first three books of the series and read them over one weekend and came in that morning like that and did the audition and got the role. And, Amazing. You know, it just kind of gives you a little bit of an indication of what the guy is like. And I remember when I was down there, you know, for filming, and it was like one of the first scenes in the Red Pony Bar and Grill. And in the books, you know, Henry has this signature salutation that he makes like that, which is, you know, hello from the, you know, welcome to the Red Pony Bar and Grill and continual soiree. And, you know, they, you know, it wasn't in the script like that. And, you know, I wasn't going to impose and say, why don't you do this? And so whenever, you know, Lou gets ready to do the line like that, he turns around like that and says the line, you know, welcome to Red Pony Bar and Grill and continual soiree. And the director, Chris Chulak, looked at him and said, that's really good. Keep it. And Lou looks over at me and I'm standing behind the camera and he goes, I will. Like, so, you know, he's just a remarkable guy. Like, had a great sense of humor. And I really just, you know, got to know him over the first couple of years, like that we were filming, Longmire again, and, you know, got a great time. Like, it would, you know, meet him every time I was out in Los Angeles, go out to dinner and everything like that. And, I think it took him a couple of years to work up the nerve, like that. And he finally, you know, cornered me and said, hey, I've got this book that I'm working on like that. And I was wondering if you would be willing to take a look at it. And I said, yeah, sure. I'm happy to. And so he gave me the manuscript, like to go take a look at the book. And, sorry about that. That's my partner in crime here. Yeah. And, anyway, like I took a look at the book and I thought, this is really, really interesting. This is something really, really different. It was not what I thought he would write about. I thought it would be, you know, first I thought, oh, maybe it's some kind of like tell all Hollywood book or what it's like, you know, to be in Hollywood and have all this stuff happen and all these different things like that. And I just thought, you know, I was not prepared for an otherworldly fantasy sci-fi, epic book, you know, that he wrote. It was something completely different, from what I suspected, you know, he was going to write. Yeah. And it was really, really marvelous. And I told him so like that. And so at that point, you know, we would bounce it back and forth and he would send it to me and I would give him, you know, notes and things like that. And now he's a published author. He's one of us.
That's amazing. What a cool relationship.
Yeah.
Built on that interaction early on. I love that story. Well, of course, I'll drop a link to that book, The Tinderbox, by Lou Diamond Phillips in the show notes as well, so that you can look at that one. I think that, is it out or is it coming out this week?
No, it's out.
Okay, cool. Yeah. That's fantastic. Well, what a great story. All right, my friend, before we wrap up with your advice to your fellow scribes on how to keep going, a fun one for you. We give to all authors. If you could choose one author from any era for an all expense paid dinner to your favorite spot in the world, who would you choose? Where would you take them post COVID? All expense paid.
Go. Oh, that's tough. That's really tough. It's obviously, you know, it's a temptation to go with, you know, the Hallmarks, trying, you know, get Shakespeare, try and get, you know, Charles Dickens,
something. I've heard
those. It would have to be John Steinbeck. I am a big, big John Steinbeck fan, and I think his, you know, his understanding of humanity, his ability to tackle, you know, a large canvas like that and still, you know, keep it on a scale of humanity. The humor, you know, that's in his books, all of those things. I'd have to go with John Steinbeck. I would just have to.
Nice.
There are
nice.
A number of others, but that's the one I'd probably go with if given the first choice.
And where are you going to take him?
Let's see. Where would I take him? Probably, maybe Harry's New York Bar in Paris. Maybe. Ooh. That's where I'd take him. Like, you know, get him out, let him stretch his legs a little bit.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, kudos on the 16th Sheriff Walt Longmire murder mystery that is next to Last Stand, centers around Custer's Last Fight, one of the most viewed paintings in American history, an art heist. And of course, Johnson lightens the atmosphere in this complex, thought-provoking mystery that highlights art and Western history, emphasizing the contrast between Native accounts and white history. That was a Library Journal review. Congrats on that one. So your quick... just a pearl of wisdom on for your fellow writers on just how to keep going, man, how to keep the ink flowing during this really kind of stressful time.
Well, I think, you know, what I immediately, this book is actually, you know, it's dedicated to Catherine Court, you know, who was, you know, my editor and publisher for a number, you know, well, up until last year like that. And if Walt Longmire has a godmother, I would imagine that, you know, Catherine Court would be that godmother. And I remember when The Cold Dish came out, I remember walking into a Barnes & Noble and looking and seeing, you know, the rows and rows and rows of mystery novels and discovering that there were like about 250 mystery novels that came out in hardback alone every month. And I remember looking at Catherine and saying, how am I ever going to get seen? How am I ever going to get noticed? How am I ever, you know, going to get, you know, out there where the readers can find me? And I remember her turning to me and saying, write good books. That's the only thing that you have control over. I mean, if you can drive yourself crazy thinking about, you know, publicity and marketing and Hollywood and all these different things, but in the final analysis, the only thing that you're really ever going to have control over is the writing itself. And to always remind yourself to write good books. And so I would pass that information along to all my writing friends out there. You know, just remember to write good books.
Yeah, man. Well, that's some fantastic advice. You are taking it to heart, of course. And congrats. I'm going to point at your home base there, CraigAllenJohnson.com. Anywhere else you want to point listeners to connect with you? It seems like all the stuff's there.
I'm trying my best. I'm kind of technologically, you know, inept, like that. But I, as you know, since we have no video on this right now, you can tell. And you're lucky because it only took me 5 minutes to get the audio to work when you called.
No.
Like it. So I'm doing the best I can. But I've got a Facebook page, Craig Johnson Official, you know, with the blue check mark.
Yeah.
Like that I check in every day. And of course, there's Instagram, like that, with UCross Pop 25 for yep. UCross Population 25, our little town here on the hinterlands, like that. And we're in all the fine bookstores and some crummy ones too, as a matter of fact. So.
All right, Craig. Well, we thank you for your time and please come back again.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And scene. All right. Appreciate you, man.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
That was great. Good luck with everything.
And, let me know when you want me again. We'll do it again.
Oh, man. That was so good. Appreciate you. Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of The Writer Files. And if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating or a review to help other writers out there find us. You can always leave a comment or a question and visit the entire archives at writerfiles.fm, and you can chat with me on Twitter at Kelton Reed. Cheers. Talk to you next week.